holding on Vav Amud Aleph. We're holding on Vav Amud Aleph near the bottom.
Five lines from the bottom. Okay, we left off. We're trying to figure out
where they're. We're trying to figure out when we just got started. We're trying to figure out where we see that Rabbi Akiva holds the concept that not all the Maris Negoyim can combine with, that not all the four shades of Tzaraas can combine with each other. So the last thing we said was
that Rabbi Akiva had said that what's an analogy about when we have the sides of Tzaraas can be various shades of white.
It can also be various shades of white mixed with red. That would be, he said, like four cups of milk,
one of which a different number of drops of blood fell in. That results from that. Well, that's the thing, actually.
Rashi talks a little bit further in a couple of lines that the vote is there's two different ways of looking. When you have tzaraas of white mixed with red, what it is like this. It doesn't mean the whole thing is a uniform pink color. Now, you do have Rishonim who learn that way. You do have Rishonim who understand that it's to be saying that when you have, the Ramban, I think, for example, learns this way, that when you have a posuch, when you have a mixed color, it means that you have a uniform color, pinkish, instead of a whitish color, instead of one of the four shades of white, you have a uniform shade of pink. However, Rashi doesn't learn that way. Rashi learns that what you have is, you have the basic tzaraas as white. However, you have like red streaks in there.
So therefore, we're comparing it to milk
and blood, which both are fairly thick liquids. They don't mix that easily, to give an analogy to the idea of how it'll look with white, with streaks of red.
Tzaraas is one thing, and milk.
But we have to teach a kohen. A kohen has to learn
It's white with streaks of red.
But there are different shades of white, and there are different types of red. So therefore, the point is, for example, again, we discussed yesterday that, for example, when we said there are two, then four, then eight, then 16. So the Rambam, for example, understands that the 16, the cup with the 16 drops, is the Baheres, which has red streaks in it, because since the Baheres is more intensely white, you need more red in there in order for it to be noticeable. Whereas, for example, the other ones, the ones that were like the Se'ace, which we said was like wool, which is a little bit of a duller white, yet duller, Krum Beitza, which is the membrane of an egg, which is yet duller. Each one of those needs less red in it to be noticeable. The Ravid learns the other way around. The Ravid learns on the contrary. The one with the two drops is the Baheres, the one with the four is the same.
The point is that if we're talking about that you have red,
that you have some shade of white with streaks of red in it, you need to be able to know what that looks like. You need to be able to compare it to a certain known color. So like this, Rabbi Akiva uses the analogy, or Rabbi Hanina actually explains that what Rabbi Akiva would hold is that it's like these four cups of like these four cups of milk with varying amounts of blood mixed in. The point is that he said that zelamilim is ever zelamilim is ever, that one is above the other, which means, again, we brought that expression before to say that Rabbi Akiva holds zelamilim is ever, and that he holds each shade can only combine with the next nearest shade, not two shades away. So therefore, so if that's the case, then we have a proof that Rabbi Akiva says that, based on Rabbi Hanina's understanding of Rabbi Akiva. The problem with that is five lines from the bottom of Vav Amud Aleph. Actually, seven lines from the bottom, rather. Make that six lines. Amur. Okay. Amur de Shamat Leila Rabbi Akiva b'Pasuch. Fine. So we find that Rabbi Akiva says this concept when it comes to the Pasuch, the mixed red and white color. V'choluk mishamat Leila. Where do we ever see Rabbi Akiva hold the same concept when it comes to the pure white ones? That the various shades of white, that each one should only combine with
the mixed ones, not the pure ones.
Maybe he holds the mixed ones. You can have each mixed one can only combine with the next nearest mixed one. So the eight drops one can only combine with four drop one or a two drop one, but not with a 16. The eight can combine with the four or the 16, but not with the two. Let's say. Who says you would hold the same thing? If you're talking about milk, if you're talking about snow color or wool color or whatever, who says he wouldn't say that snow color, for example, could combine with egg membrane color, even though there are many shades apart? You might answer, okay, the same way as you find Rabbi Akiva saying that concept when it comes to the reddish white ones, so you would assume if he says the same thing by the reddish ones, presumably he says the same thing by the whitish ones. The problem is with Pasuch Gufa and Mishamas Leh. Where do you see that Rabbi Akiva holds that concept even when it comes to the mixed ones? Pasuch means mixed red and white. So again, Rashi looks, Choluk means pure white. They're not pure. I mean, we said there's different shades of white, but meaning white without any admixture of any other color. So it, does Rabbi Akiva really hold that? V'hot Tanya, but we learn in a Braisa, or actually Hagoy Tabach changes it to V'hot Tznan, because it's really a Mishnah, actually. We learn in a Mishnah that, now the Mishnah starts off by saying as follows. Rabbi Shmuel over there holds that when you're talking about the pasuk, when you're talking about the mixed red and white one, what's an analogy to give? How do you give an analogy between the what the baheres mixed with red looks like versus what the seis versus what it tulda, which we said was sid hahekel, the plaster of the hekel? How do you compare? He says one of them is like snow. He says one of them is like snow with a little bit of blood mixed in, and the other one is like milk with a little bit of blood mixed in. But we learn in the Mishnah there, Rabbi Akiva, Adam dam shebezeh. No, the reddish one with either the baheres or sid, which is the tolda of baheres, either one is kiyayin hamozik v'mayim. Either one is like wine mixed with water. The only difference is the baheres is bright white like snow, and the one that's like sid, like plaster, is a little bit duller than that, but they're still both like wine mixed with varying amounts of water.
Who buys these books, by the way?
They came from the shul over here. They previously learned Shavuos a while back in shul, so they were available. So the difference is that you have a brighter white and you have a duller white. But the point is, in other words, the fact that Rabbi Akiva is using the expression that Baheret is the strongest and Sid is duller than that, that means, in other words, that Rabbi Akiva holds that that's in fact the order, that the order is that you have Sid, and that you have Shelig, and then Sid. So we're back to our original statement, which is it's significant to know that order, in therefore that Sid can only combine together with the next higher one, which is Baheret. It can't combine together with any of the others. So there we see then, Rabbi Akiva holds, Zula Mai Lemizu, that one is higher than the next, and then they don't just combine interchangeably. But so Rashi here explains why before did we use an analogy of milk mixed with blood, and here we're using an analogy of water mixed with wine. Rashi says because before we were talking about the totality of the nega, that it looks like, again, it looks like red with white with red streaks in it. Here we're talking about the area of the streaks themselves. What color is that? And Rabbi Akiva says that you have it. It looks like water, like wine mixed with some amount of water. So for im isa, now if you're going to tell me that, so again, we were trying to establish that the Mishnah and the Goyim that lists them in order that said they have Baheres is the strongest, and the next and the second strongest meaning they're the brightest white. The brightest white. Then you have, we said, the it's tulda is kisida haichol, is like plaster. Then we had seis is like white wool, and shniela, the secondary to it, is kikrum beitza, is like an egg membrane. We were arguing all this time that
transparent,
not transparent, meaning like it's a duller white. It is maybe a little bit translucent. We'll talk about that soon. But yeah, so we were trying to argue that
that same color point is about different. We have a proof from this, because you're going to tell me
that Rabbi Akiva holds that if you're going to tell me that Mishnah, which listed you had Baheret and then the next one, the next dollar white is Seis, Shel Semer Deha Hemeni Miboyle, then Rabbi Akiva should be saying that you have Baheret is the brightest and Semer, wool, is the next dullest. Instead he says Sid, which implies, therefore, that Mishnah in Negoim that lists them
can't be like him. Amri, so the answer ain't nothing. That is true. And indeed, you learn in a blaise of nothing. And the loisha omer Rabbi Akiva shall sid dey aimena. Rabbi Akiva was not in fact saying
that specifically that sid is duller than baheres.
Deha means duller. Yeah. El shall semer dey aimena. Rather, he was saying that semer is
that semer, that wool is more deha than it. In other words, so one way. So Tosfos explains the point is that. Rabbi Akiva, there's two explanations. One is Rabbi Akiva is mentioning Shelag and Sid because Rabbi Shmuel mentioned those. Rabbi Akiva himself doesn't have to hold of that ordering of the colors.
Or it may be that Rabbi Nachman is saying that in fact Rabbi Shmuel also wasn't talking about Sid. We have to change the ruling of the Mishnah and say Rabbi Shmuel himself was talking about Baheres and then Semer,
and comparing them respectively to snow mixed with blood or milk mixed with blood, and then Rabbi Akiva is saying that no,
okay.
Baheres is the brightest. We said everybody agrees Baheres is the brightest. Yeah. So that Munol, that's the question. Munol under Baheres Azihi, where do we see that Baheres is in fact the brightest of all the colors? I'm going to buy it. Omakro, because the Pasuk says, Baheres Levonahi, because the Pasuk says, if it is a white Baheres, and the he is a mute. He levana ve'ena cheres levana. Only it is the ultimate white. No other type of tzaraf is that ultimate brilliant white.
White like what?
So that's
you said cheres is white like snow.
Pure white.
Pure white. We said that se'es is like semer, is like clean wool, as the Gemara is going to point out soon, what kind of clean wool we mean, which is a little bit, it's not quite as bright. No. Again, you're thinking of wool as yellowish because you see, when you see sheep that are at a petting zoo or whatever, you know, they've been rolling around in the dirt and whatever, their wool is not quite as clean as when it has
a white sweater.
A white sweater, okay, but even so, it's not, so we're going to talk about soon, but, yeah. Yeah, okay. Maybe, I don't know. Then you have the tolda of Vaheret. We said is like the plaster of the Hechel, like pure white plaster or white lime or whatever that's made from burning limestone. They're different. So again, according to Rashi, it's that they're different shades of white. I was mentioning yesterday that a number of Rishonim talk about the possibility that maybe some of them are actually the Balamor, for example, wants to say that maybe two of them are in fact the same shade. They're just different textures. One is rough like wool, and the other one at exactly the same shade, but a different texture, is smooth like seed.
Okay.
And the Ramban talks about that maybe they're all the same shade, but they're different types of white, like glossy versus flat versus whatever. Okay. Anyway, turn it up on him. Baheres amoka. We learn in a braisa that a baheres looks deep. In other words, when you see a baheres spot on the skin, it looks, it's not really deep, or it's not really deeper than the skin, but it looks deeper. We find in the pasuk that it's described as the appearance of it is deeper than the skin, meaning it's not actually deeper, but kamara chamaha muka minatzeil. It's like a patch of sunlight that looks deeper than the shade around, than the shady area around.
So this goes well with the Rishon that says that baheres is more translucent.
So that's okay. So now we're talking about translucent. So yeah, one idea. So actually, the Ramban has a long discussion about it. The Ramban has a long discussion about it in the pasuk, because later on in later psukim, you have a pasuk where it mentions that you see a tzaraf spot that does not look deeper than the skin. And Rashi says, I don't understand how that can be. We're saying that a bright area looks deeper than how do you have one that does look deeper and one that does not. So the Ramban has a long discussion about it. He says it depends on whether, for example, it depends on whether you have black hairs in it, for example, because then the reason why it looks deeper is if you don't have anything else in it to distract your eye, kind of, then it looks deeper. But if you have black or other color hair growing in it, as opposed to white hair,
it's an ulcer, basically.
But no, it's not enough. It's an ulcer necessarily, but whatever it is, the point is that it really won't look apart. So the Ramban actually, I don't think, talks about whether it's translucent or not. I think some other people talk about that maybe the more translucent it is, the deeper it looks. The Ramban talks about it more in terms of, for example, does it have black hair in it, which therefore it makes that breaks up the look of it, therefore it doesn't look as deep, as opposed to if there's no hair in it at all, then it looks deeper. But that's what it means. On the other hand, it's an eight.
Where it's a deep, bright spot.
So it looks deep, but the point is it's not actually deeper. It's still level with the skin. It just looks deeper because it's bright.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a bright white. Se'es, then we say, what is se'es? Ain't se'es ala gavoya. The word se'es means lifted up. So it says on all the high mountains and on all the lofty hills. So we see nisoi, same shortage as se'es, means higher. So some mafarshim, the David, for example, understand it literally means, unlike a baheres, which is flush with the skin, a se'es actually sticks out. Some other rishonim say that no, that it means that a baheres looks very deep, a se'es looks not quite as deep. So it looks higher than, it looks
it
higher.
Would be like matted finish instead of glossy.
Instead of glossy, it would be like a matte finish, right.
So to be a sediment.
But that's not necessarily, it doesn't necessarily mean elevated above the surface of the skin. It can mean elevated relative to a baheres. A baheres looks very deep. It could look, we're talking about. That, yeah. What is sapachas? The Mishnah, the Pasuk rather, also mentioned sapachas. Ain't sapachas ela tfela. The word sapachas means something secondary. So that refers to the tulbus of the se'es and the baheres that we were discussing before, the sid ha'hechol and the krum beitza. And how do we know that the word sapachas means secondary? You have a Pasuk, in part of the Nevuah, that told to Eli that his family are going to lose their high position as Kohen and whatever because of the Averis of his sons. The pasuk says that eventually your descendants are going to be so poor, that they're going to go over to the leader of one of the mishmaris, Kohuna, and say, let me join as a secondary member of one of the members of as one of the mishmaris of Kohuna, so that I can serve in the Beis Hamikdash and get something to eat. So we see that tzvacheni sapachat means something secondary. So the point is that the word tzvacheni means secondary. Okay, fine. Ashkechon tefela l'seis. In that case, then, well, the pasuk lists them in the order se'eis, sapachas, and vaheret. So in that case, we see that the se'eis has a sapachas, so it comes after se'eis. L'vaheret menolam. Where do we see that a vaheret has a tolda? Where do we see that a vaheret has a sapachas? You're not going to list the sapachas, the secondary one, before the vaheret, the primary one. So how do we know that a vaheret has a secondary? Because Nemra Lavona Vaseis for Nemra Lavona Vaharis, because both of them are described in the pasuk as Lavona. Therefore, and now we use the word Lavona before Vaharis to mean that it's the brightest white. But here we're not really talking, this isn't really a Xeda Shava or something, this is more like Gili Milsa Baalma. Anything white is going to have another kind of white associated with it. Ma Lavona Hamura Vaseis Yeshla Tfela, just like the white. Seis has a secondary one, which is the egg membrane. Aplavona hamura b'baheres, the same way. But the baheres is described as lavona. Yesh lo tfeila must have a secondary one, which is sid ha'echol. The masnisetona in a brayta, we learn a different way of learning the same thing. Hitel hakotzav sapachas ben seis v'baheres. The pasuk specifically puts the word sapachas between seis and baheres. Loy malach, sorry, that it goes on either one. Kashem shetfeila lo seis, kach tfeila
v'baheres. So it's a generic tool.
It's a generic. It means that the word sapachas means a tulda, and therefore it applies to either one. Each one has its own tulda. There's not one tulda for the both of them. We said before, each one has its own tulda. But the fact that the word is the same, right? Yeah. Okay. So let's analyze what we said when we said before.
We see that from the fact that
sapachas is placed between them. Okay. Well, we see the general idea that sapachas means secondary. We see that tzvachenina. The fact that the Braisa is saying, how do we know that both the Seis and the Baharis have a tulda because it places it between them?
Next time you bring us some clothes.
Then we said Seis ketsemerlovon, so my semerlovon. What do we mean by white wool? How white exactly? Amar Bibi, Semer Naki Ben Yomer. It's like the wool for the cleanest wool when the animal is newborn. So what happens as soon as the animal is born, the mother licks it all over to clean it up. Its wool at that point is the cleanest it's ever going to get as long as it's on the animal. And then Shemachabdin Vailamelas. Then what they do is, if they want to keep it that pure white, so that they can use it for melas, which is good, very high quality woolen clothing, then what they do is they put mechabnin, they cover the animal with a leather, they cover the animal with a leather cover, and mechabnin, like they clip this cover in place, and it remains on until they decide to shear it, and then they can use the wool for this really high quality woolen garment. So that's the kind of white we're talking about when we say that the eighth is like white wool, that's the kind of white we mean. So Rav Chanina says, what's a mashal to illustrate what the Chachamim hold when they say that? We have the Chachamim are saying that you have like this. You have Baheres, which is the brightest. Then you have Se'es, which is the next of, but it's the next brightest one after Baheres. Then you have Sid HaHechol, which is the secondary of Baheres. And therefore, it's a little duller than Seis, which is the second primary one. And then you have Krumbeta, which is the secondary of Seis, and that's the last one. How can we draw an analogy to that to illustrate that kind of thing, where you have two primaries and then two secondaries? You have two primaries followed by two secondaries. In other words, that you shouldn't think. Don't think. In other words, you might think, and we discussed before, maybe Rabbi Akiva holds this way, that maybe what it means is actually you have Baharis, and then it's Tolda. Then the next duller one after that is Se'es, and then it's Tolda. Rav Chanina wants to tell us that if you want to give an analogy, what the Chachamim hold, which is not like that, which is that you have Baheres, then Se'es, then the Tolda of Baheres, then the Tolda, then Sapachas, then Sapachas. How can we draw an analogy? L'trei Malchi or L'trei Iparchi. It's like you have two kings and two marshals. Iparchi is a Greek word. The Musaf Aruch says that it means something like a mayor, and it actually comes from a couple of Greek words that literally means the master of the horses. Marshal in English is actually an exact translation of that, because a mare in English is a horse. The marshals originally were the people in charge of the horses.
A mare is a horse?
A mare, M-A-R-E, a female horse, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. So, L'tre Malchi or L'tre Palchi.
Not the mayor of
not the mayor
New
of
York.
The city. Right. L'tre Malchi or L'tre Palchi. It's like you have two kings, and each one has his marshal. Malka Shalzeh, L'mayla Malka Shalzeh. So you have one king is higher than the other king.
Right.
The Palchi Shalzeh, L'mayla Me'Palchi Shalzeh. And then the one marshal is higher than the other marshal. Meaning when, no, meaning, well, the point is when they go in a procession, let's say, if these two kings and two marshals are going together, you're not going to have king, you're not going to have
kings and then marshals.
You're not going to have king, marshal, king, marshal. You're going to have king, marshal, marshal. That's the point.
Okay.
So therefore, yeah. So the question is, what do you mean? Hai zeh l'mayla mizeh v'zeh l'mayla mizeh? Isn't that what that's not the chachamim? That's what Rabbi Akiva was saying, that each one is higher is higher than the other one, and each one only combines with the next higher one or whatever. Yeah. Ella no. Malka shalzeh l'mayla me'palka dinapshe. No, we have to understand it differently. It does mean you have king, marshal, king, marshal. The one king is higher than his own marshal. And then the second king walks along with is higher. The second king is higher than his marshal. So therefore, you have another
marshal. So they walk king.
So they walk king marshal, king marshal. So therefore, you would have, in other words, Baheres, Baheres, Tulda,
the first marshal is still higher than the second king.
That's we're going to get to that. We're going to get to that. Wait, hold on, hold on.
Higher, he's just preceding him in the procession.
Yeah, yeah. But hold on. Stop. Wait a second. Okay. Okay, Rav Ada Bar Abba Omer. Rav Ada Bar Abba gives a different way you can draw an analogy. Never mind, you have two different kings with their marshals. Let's say, in other words, you're talking about four different levels of royalty or nobility within one kingdom. You're going Malka, like you have the king, but Al Kafta. Then you have the Mishnah Lamelech. Al Kafta is actually a translation. You know, we have this coming week's parasha Miketz. Yosef becomes the Mishnah Lamelech. There's Targumim that actually translates that when he's made the Mishnah Lamelech, that translated as Al-Kafta. So an Al-Kafta is Mishnah Lamelech, Rufila, then you have the general, Veresh Galusa, and then you have Veresh Galusa who's in charge of the Jews. So again, you have therefore, they go in that order. Again, though, the question becomes, Hai Zelamayla Mizehu, then in that case you're back to the Akiva. That where you're saying that each one is higher than the than is it, that right? Elok gan malko v'ru filo va'al kapta v'reish kolusa. No, rather we have to say it's like you have the king and the general and the viceroy and the reish kolusa. Meaning you don't even though the viceroy the al kapta is second to the king when they're walking together. Who accompanies the king? The ru filo, the general. Who accompanies the al kapta? The one two levels down from him, the reish kolusa.
So
that's what we're saying, because the Rufila, the general, is one. Who accompanies the king, who's
the
level
viceroy
one?
The viceroy is accompanied by the Reish Galusa.
That's
very
saying.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So what we're saying is the king, who is number one, is not accompanied by his viceroy, who's number two. He's accompanied by the general, who's number three, the Rufila. Who is the Al-Kafta, the viceroy, who is he accompanied by? The Reish Galusa, who is number four. So in the same way, then, you have that even though the order of colors then is Baheres Se'eth, Tulda of Baheres, Tulda of Se'eth, but when it comes to figuring out which is the Tulda of which, the number three in the list is the Tulda of Baheres, just as number three on the list, the Rufila, the general, is the accompaniment of the king. And then the Sapachas, the Tulda of Se'eth, is number four in the list, but it goes together with number two, just as the Reish Galusa, number four on the list, goes together with the Al-Kafta, the number two. Rava Omar, Rava says, here's another way you can analogize it. We can talk about different levels of kings. You're going Shabru Malka of Akesa, like you have Shabru Malka, the king of Persia, and the Akesa, the Roman emperor.
What did they call him, Shabru Malka?
That was his name.
Shabru means
Shabru. That's in Hebrew. He didn't have a Hebrew name. He had a Persian name. Come on. His name was Shabur. His name was Shabur. In English, they usually write it Shapur with a P.
Right.
It has a meaning. Shah means the king, as you know, like the Shah of Iran.
Right.
And
right.
Pur, I don't know, has some meaning. No. I don't know what his name means, but whatever it is, he had a name. No. You had Shabur Malka of Akesa. So like you have Shabur Malka, the king of Persia, and you have the Roman emperor. So two different kingdoms, in other words. So, Amalei Rapapa LeRava, Hevi Nayu Odif. So, Rapapa asks Rava, in which one are you considering to be the more important one over here? Now, the Gemara is going to answer right back that, of course, the Romans are far more important than the Persians. However, Rashi says the reason why the Papa asked is because Rava put Shabu Malka first.
Right.
So maybe that means that Rava considers Shabu Malka to be a more powerful kingdom than the Romans. The real reason why Rava did that is because he's living under the Persians, so naturally he has to mention them first, out of Derechetes for them. But the Papa asked, which one are you considering to be first? Amalei, so he answers him with an expression, B'chorshia ka'achalei. Chorshia, Rashi explains, means a forest. Are you the kind of person who's been hiding out and eating in the forest all your life? Like you're not there as part of society. You don't understand. You don't look around you and see. Puk chazi tiva deman sagi malma. Go see which one's fame is greater in the world. Sagi means that it goes. Tiva has two meanings. It means fame. It also actually, Ben Yoyada points out that it actually means coinage as well, in the sense that the coinage of the Romans circulated much more readily anywhere in the world than the Persians' coinage. Yeah. And in fact, Dichtiv, as the Pasuk says, this was in Babel. Even in Babel,
So he just Googled it and he found
it. So in other words, he's saying that the Roman Empire is
under
the Persians. But nevertheless, Rome is still a much more powerful empire than the Persians are. Dichtiv, you have a pasuk in one of Daniel's visions. He sees a creature over there, a seichel kol ara, where it ate up the whole world, usidushina, and it trampled it, v'sadkina, and it crushed it. What does this represent? Amar Rabbi Yechanan, zu roimi chayeves. This refers to wicked Rome. Shetiva yatsa b'chol ha'olam kulei. That its fame or its coinage circulated in the entire world. And in fact, Ben Yoyada says that's the point of mentioning that its coinage circulated, meaning, in other words, everybody is shipping grain and food and whatever to Rome, and they're getting in return Roman coinage. So in that sense, Rome is literally eating the whole world. So they're getting their grain and whatever. Yeah. So in that sense, yeah. So the point is, in other words, Rava is saying to him, like, what do you live out in the forest or something? You don't realize looking around that the Romans are much greater. The reason why I mentioned the Persians for nothing. He himself understood that the reason other Rishonim, by the way, have different other explanations of Bechor Shia Ka'achalei. There's an explanation that Ben Hanano brings over here that Bechor Shia is some kind of eye disease, meaning that Rava is telling him, like, what do you have an eye disease or something that you can't see clearly what's going on? And the Aruch says yet another interesting one, that it can mean, do you want your eyes to get put out? You're asking who's more powerful, the Romans or the Persians. Like, you need to ask. Don't you realize if the Persians hear you ask that, you're going to be in big trouble? Whatever it is, the point is, yes, of course the Romans are more powerful, and he mentions in the Pasuk, but better not to ask the question. Yeah. Anyway, the point is that Rava is using this analogy the same way. In other words, the idea is, so you have the Romans, and you have the Romans versus the Persians. Each one has their Mishnah Lamelach, their viceroy. In the same way, you have the Baharis and it's secondary, and you have the Seis and it's secondary. Which it can mean also. Now, actually, it's not so much La'avdil, and the fact that you have hostile Goyim ruling over us is a form of Tzaraas also, you know. But nowadays they're less so, Baruch Hashem. But yeah. Anyway. The point is, though, you were mentioning about the question, can we be saying that the viceroy of one is as powerful as the king of the other? Yes, some of the Mephoshim explain that's exactly what Rava means to imply, that you have that Shavu Malka, even though he's a king, he's an emperor over his own empire, really, when you think about the geopolitics of it, he's no more powerful than the viceroy of the Roman Empire. Yeah. But, of course, he couldn't say that outright. Yeah.
Well, the Persians were very, very powerful.
Yeah, but still not yet. Ravina says, here's a different explanation. Like you have a woolen cloak, the shachke, and then you have a worn out one, where when it's worn out, it's not quite as bright. Sedina de kitna v'shachke, and then you have a linen garment. Glima d'amar means a woolen cloak, which is very white when it's new. V'shachke, and then you have a worn out one, which isn't quite as bright. And then you have sedina de kitna. Then you have a linen sheet. Veshach when it's new, and then veshachke, and then you have a worn out one. So the point is, in other words, so Rashi learns like this: that you have like this. With both of them, the new one is much wider than the old one, but a new woolen one and a new linen one are almost on the same level. The same way, then, a Baharis and a Seis are almost on an equal level. There's only a slight difference between them. Once you get to their tuldus, you have Sid versus egg membrane, then you see a big difference, just as you see a big difference in a worn-out woolen garment versus a worn-out linen garment.
So the tuldus differ much more.
So the tuldus differ much more than the others. Yeah.
The others.
Yeah. Okay, Tosfos talks about that actually we see from a different Gemara that says that actually worn out linen garments are actually whiter than are actually whiter than new ones, and therefore they're better to use for bedikah cloth.
Worn out linen, much whiter,
and they're therefore that they're better for bedikah because they're whiter, and therefore you'll more clearly see blood on it for bedikahs for a woman.
Do you ever have a T-shirt that's worn out? It used to be red, now it's kind of like pink.
So Tosfos says that what it means is we're not talking about the whiteness, we're talking about the level of importance, similar to the ones with the kings and the noblemen and whatever that we're talking about. Or Tosfos says maybe what it means is, no, we don't mean over there that a worn-out linen piece of cloth is whiter, we just mean it's softer, therefore it's more suitable for bedikah. Why you have all these different analogies that Avaz talks about, that Chara Chaim talks about, that each one had a problem with the other one, because, for example, when we start talking about kings and when we start talking about kings and marshals, you still have to ask the question, fine, but what order do they go in? Do they go king, marshal, or do they go king, marshal, marshal? So therefore, that one's not as clear. So that if you start talking about the different levels within one kingdom, like we said, the king, the viceroy, the general, and the Reish Kalusa, fine, but it's not always clear to the average person which one is higher than which one.
Well,
so therefore,
when two kings walk together, they're not separated by a vice marshal.
I mean, they might be because they have their own person together with them. I don't know. Anyway, and then you have...
Did you ever see Trump walking with Tillerson behind Putin?
I don't know. I never paid attention. Onward. Then you have, for example, Rava's analogy with Shabu Malka and the Kaser. But on the other hand, the problem with that is, like Rapapa says, but you don't know necessarily which one is the best one,
right.
is the greatest one. So therefore, Ravina finishes off with, you know what, never mind using analogies from kings or whatever, we're talking about whites. Let's talk about whites, about various kinds of white garments. That's why each one brings a different marshal. Now we're done with Saras. Now we're going to get back to Tumas Mikdash V'Kodshav, which is going to be, again, the subject of the rest of this perek and the whole next perek.
So wait, let me ask you now about Reish Galusa.
Yeah.
So that means that basically the only ones in the Persian Empire were the Jews and Persians, because they have...
I guess. Well, I mean, they weren't the only ones, but they were the biggest... The Jews were the biggest minority, I guess. All right. We said in the Mishnah like this, Es sheyesh b'yadiyah b'tchila b'chula. We said in the Mishnah as follows, that you have, when do you bring a korban ola b'yored, for Tumas Mikdash V'Kodshav, if you had yadiyah b'tchila, which we discussed the other day, whether yadiyah b'tchila means that you knew that you were tamei, or is it enough that you know the concept, that touching something tamei makes you tamei, whatever, then you forgot, and you ate kodshim and went into the Mikdash, then you remember it again later. That's when you bring a korban ola b'yored. So now we're going to analyze how we know this. Oh, no, actually, we're not going to deal with that. We're not going to deal with how we know that, rather, because that we dealt with earlier. We had Rabbi Akiva's limud, we had Rebbe. No, what we're going to deal with, rather, is like this. We said that if you have Yediyah B'Tchila, if at the beginning you knew, then you had Helam in the middle, and you didn't have Yediyah B'Sof, you never realized afterwards that, hey, I was Tomei when I ate these Korbanos or when I went into the Smithers, then we said that the Sorir HaPnimi of Yom Kippur, the sawyer whose blood is brought into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that's brought on Yom Kippur, plus Yom Kippur, is toiler for you. It doesn't take away the punishment. It suspends it until you realize that you actually did this tumah, and then you will bring your korban over the end.
We have to analyze how we know that.
Right. So we have to analyze that. How do we know that sawyer HaPnimi is meant to be mechaper for that?
Now, when you just said no, means that you knew the halacha, or you knew that.
That's what we discussed the other day. We said that Rebbe had said that Yediyah based rabbi is enough. That you knew from cheder that when you become tamei, then you're not allowed to eat kodshim, etc. But we said that on the other hand, you have the more straightforward meaning of Yediyah, that you actually knew you were tamei. Tanarabon, minayin she'ein hakosim medaber ela b'tumas mikdash v'kodshav. How do we know like this? When the pasuk tells us that you have to bring a korban ola v'yored. No, we do have to deal first with the korban ola v'yored. Sorry, what we have to deal with first is as follows. We are going to deal later with the question how we know that davka the sur b'fnim is mechatzah for that. That's going to be later on Zion Amud Beis. First, what we have to deal with is as follows. Okay, we established before that fine. We know there has to be yediyah, then helam, then yediyah to bring the korban. Fine, that we discussed. The question is, the pasuk says like this. The pasuk starts off by saying that nefesh ashatiga b'chol davar tamei, a person touches anything tamei, over tumas chayav tmeir, over tumas behemet tmeir, over nivlas chayav tmeir, over nivlas behemet tmeir, v'nelam imenu, he doesn't know about it, or tamei, and he becomes tamei, v'oshem, and then he's guilty. The pasuk does not say what he does during the time when he's tamei. That's what we have to figure out. How do we know, b'chlal, that the carbon out of the yerdet is dafka that you became tomei and then you ate kod shim and went into this mikdash? But the pasuk doesn't say anything about, the mikdash. The pasuk just says that he became tomei. So, minayim she'ena How do we know the pasuk is only talking about that you became tamei and then went into the bais hamikdash or ate kodshim? How do we know it doesn't just mean that you became tamei and that itself you have to bring a korban and then forgot about it and that itself you have to bring a korban for? Now the Rashba says why would we even think that you should have to bring a korban for such a thing? And he says because we find, for example, this concept chayavodim latayr asmibiragel that we learn that a person is mechuyav to make themselves tahor when it comes yom tov, so that they can come to the bais mikdash. So you would think, therefore, maybe if a person became tamei in the regel, that alone maybe obligates them to bring a korban if they forgot about it. How do we know that it involves actually going into the bais mikdash? Or, for example, we know a kohen is not allowed to become tamei mes. Maybe though, what the pasuk also means is a kohen is not allowed to become tamei mes, and if he does, he gets malchus. But also, he's not allowed to become Tommy with a Nevela. However, he doesn't get Malchus to it. That's what Korban Olav Yerid does. How do we know that's not what it means? Like this, V'dinhu. We can figure it out logically as follows. Hoyo v'hizir v'onesh ala Tumah. Since we find that the Pasuk warns us not to eat Kodshim or enter the Bais Mikdash when you're Tommy, v'onesh, and it also punishes for it, that the person gets Kodesh for that. V'chi of Korban ala Tumah. And we find that the Pasuk imposes a Korban if you became Tommy. So, just like when we're warned not to become Tomei, and when we have a punishment for becoming Tomei, the Azhara and the Onesh are not just for becoming Tomei, they're for Tumas Mikdash for Kodshav.
So, we know it's for Tumas.
By the Azhara, the Pasuk explicitly says that when the Pasuk says there's an Azhara, lo yitamu es mikdashi, which means don't enter the Bais Mikdash when you're Tomei, but Kodshim lo yoichal adash yitah, don't eat Kodshim till you become Tahor. So, there you have an Azhara, not eat Kodshim when you're Tomei. And the punishment by both of them, it also says specifically in connection with the Bais Mikdash and with Kodshim. Ki es mikdash Hashem Tomei v'nichlasa, and v'hanefesh ashotecha blasim izavach ha'shalom v'nichlasa.
Why do we need two proofs?
One for the Mikdash, one for the Kodesh. One for the Mikdash, one for Kodshim. The point is that we have an Azhara for each one, and a warning, don't do it, and we have an Onesh for each one. Now we have, elsewhere, the Torah tells us you have to bring a Korban for Tumah. Mark shehizir va'anash al tumah. So just like when it warns and gives the punishment for tumah, lohizir va'anash el al tumah mitzvah for kodshim. It's not just for becoming tummy; it's for becoming tummy and then going into the mitzvah or eating kodshim. After shechiyav korban al tumah, the same thing. When you chayav korban for tumah, must be logically lechiyav al tumah mitzvah for kodshim. It must be, even though the pasuk didn't spell it out, it must be involving tumah mitzvah for kodshim. Problem with that is the aim of tumah. How do you know? Maybe it applies instead or additionally to the case that the Tosfos says that means maybe also the case where a person ate truma. Now, what do you mean?
Or, so the first would be
hold on. It would mean like this. It would mean that by truma also, the Torah tells us you're not allowed to eat truma when you're tomei, because the same pasuk that we just quoted by Kodshim lo yoichal includes truma. We have an onesh for it, because later on the pasuk says that if you do, umesu boi ki yichalavu, that you get mitzvah. That's the onesh. So maybe it means that when would you bring a korban olav yerid, if you became tamei, then entered the bais mikdash, or ate kodshim, or ate truma. How do we know it doesn't apply to truma? Yeah, onesh for his. Yeah. No, not only. Tosfos says in addition.
In addition.
Yeah. The answer is, fine, but we don't find a case where you have misa the mazid and then b'shoigig you would bring a korban for it.
On what? Right?
Meaning truma, they're not korban of course, it's truma when they're truma. It's misa b'de shemayim. That's different than korban. Where we find the concept of bringing a chasa is if you did something that the mazid would make you chayiv korban, then b'shoigig you bring a chasa. So we have no basis for saying something that you chayiv misa b'de shemayim that you should have to bring a korban over the yerid for.
Bring a
korban olav yerid is a type of chatas. Right. The difference is a regular chatas is a fixed value. You have to bring either a kisvah or a seer, either a female sheep or a female goat.
Right.
A korban olav yerid is you can bring a sheep if you can afford it, a two birds, one for an olav, one for a chatas, if you can't afford that, if you're
right.
dal, and
right.
if you're dal, if you're really poor, then you bring a korban mincha. But it's a species of chatas.
Right.
So therefore, the Gemara is saying, when do you find you bring a chatas is something that you would have been chayef koris if it was b'mezid? You don't find a concept where something that was chayef mitzvah b'de shemayim b'mezid, you bring a chatas if it was b'shoigig. Truma is mitzvah b'de shemayim. Therefore, we have no basis for saying that Terumah should be included. However, the Gemara says, Eima hani mili korban kavua. Fine, but maybe you could argue that's true of a chatas that has a fixed value. Aval ol v'yored nasi. Maybe when it comes to a korban ol v'yored, maybe you should have to bring it even for things that are on chayiv kari. Well, even for things that are on the chayiv misa. Midi dehava shmiyat kova bitis v'sayim. After all, it shouldn't be any different than Shmiyat Kol, which is Shavuot Eidus, which we're going to deal with later in the fourth parak of our Masechta, where you have people, you know that there are people who know Eidus for you, and you make them swear that they're going to come to Beis Din and testify, and they say we don't know it. Later on, when they want to do Chobanit, they bring a korban over the Yered.
What's the punishment for that?
The mazid, nothing, but it's a Shavuot Sheker. I mean, it's a Shavuot Sheker. We're going to learn later on in the Masechta that the Eivish punishes a Shavuot Sheker pretty seriously, but there's no punishment for it in Beis Din Shomach. Yeah, it is, because
they said
they made a shvur. We don't know this Eidus.
No, you're lucky. You just started something new.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we don't know.
But meaning, in other words, they swore falsely that they don't know it. And they really, they did know it. So we're saying they bring a korban out of the earth. And the Abdu Sassayim, and we have Shavuot Bidjit Sassayim, which we dealt with briefly before, and we're going to deal with in more detail in the third paragraph, where a person makes a Shavuot on some personal matter and then violates it, or it was a Shavuot that Lachachila was false or whatever. Those kinds of things you bring a korban ol v'yored for, even though there was no kares involved. So maybe argue, fine, when it comes to a fixed value chatas, you only bring it for something that's chayav kares. When it comes to a variable value chatas, a korban ol v'yored, you see you bring it for shavuot, you see you bring it for various kinds of false shavuot, even though those are not chayav kares, and not really misa b'dei shemayim either. Therefore, by the same logic, you could say that, yes, you eat truma, betuma, maybe also you bring a korban ol v'yored.
So maybe ol v'yored is more flexible.
It's more flexible, exactly.
Enough to bring it almost any time.
Yeah, which the Rishonim point out, the vort is, the Gemara understood that fine, that the Shavuot Sheker is a pretty serious thing. Therefore, we would assume that fine, it's in a category of its own kind of, but fine, at least Misa B'dei Shemayim is not worse than that. Okay. So we can't say that. No, rather we have to say,
what's worse, Misa B'dei Shemayim or
Koris? Koris is that the person's neshama gets cut off. And also some of the Rishonim say that it also means that he's going to die childless, etc. Misa B'dei Shemayim just means the person drops dead. Which one? Earlier that, you have different opinions. I think our Gemara says that in that sense, Misa B'dei Shemayim is worse because you die at a younger age. Misa B'dei Shemayim 50, Koris 60, but that's not so clear. So Koris is later, but
you're cut off.
The answer is omakra. No, the reason why
the question is
why don't we say that the korban ol v'yored applies to, when we say tumas mikdash v'kadshav, it should be three things: tumas mikdash, tumas kadshav, and tumas truma. Any of those three, a person knew at one point that he had yidiyah at one point, or whatever kind of yidiyah he said, then he forgot, went into the mikdash, ate kadshim or ate truma. Then later on he realized, then he brings his korban. How do we know it only applies to the mikdash or the kadshim, but not truma? The answer is omakra ba. Because the Pasuk says that he becomes, the Pasuk says in connection with the carbon out of the yard, that any tumah that he becomes tumah in it, that's a miut. Baflam oti truma, that comes to exclude truma.
Wow.
Yeah. Question is, ema baflam oti mikdash. How do we know? Maybe the paket, maybe the word baf means to exclude where he entered the bet mikdash when he's tumah. And you would say, why entering into the bet mikdash is not a small thing. Paket, you would say, like five life a carbon out of the yard. Maybe you would say, going into the bet mikdash when you're tumah, it's such a serious thing that a carbon out of the yard is not enough. Ad-demaisi korban kavua, you would have to bring a fixed value chatas for such a thing. How do you know they're not? So, kori rava le rebbe. So, rava said about the following statement that Rebbe is going to say, where we're going to learn this out clearly. He said on this statement that Rebbe is going to say, he applied to an expression, dola mayim midbordes amokim. Rebbe is like somebody with this teaching that he's going to explain to us. He's like somebody who draws water from a deep well, where we wouldn't have known it otherwise without it. Titania, Rebbe, Ekra Nichai. Rebbe says like this. When you look at the pasuk, the first pasuk that describes the case of Tumas Mikdash Rekadshah, look in Torah Rashalom on the side, number base. Oy nefesh ha-shatiga b'chol dover tomei, a person touches anything that's tomei, oy b'nivlas chaya tmeya, or nevela of a chaya tmeya, oy b'nivlas behema tmeya, or the nevela of a behema tmeya, oy b'nivlas sheret tomei, v'nei lang menu, and he forgets about tomei v'ashe. Rebbe says, Ekra Nichai. We really only needed in the pasuk to say chaya tmeya. Behema lama nemra. Why does it have to say behema as well? Once it says chaya, automatically that includes behema as well. In fact, Rashi brings from elsewhere, from the pasuk, where we see that the word chaya includes behemoths as well. So it's a chaya asher toichu. Another pasuk, which is the domestic animal that you can and can't. So we see Chaya includes Behemoth. So why does it have to say in our pasuk Chaya Tmeya and Behemoth Tmeya?
The reason is, in order to make it Zera Shava, Nema Khan Behemoth Tmeya, he mentions the word Behemoth Tmeya, the Nema Lahawan Behemoth Tmeya, then you have in a different pasuk in Parshat Tzav where it says that a person touches a Behemoth Tmeya and eats from the meat of a Shlomim and gets Kares. Therefore, Malahal and Trumas Kodesh, therefore, just like there, it's talking about Trumas Kodesh specifically, and not Truma, Akan, Trumas Kodesh. So the same thing over here. Our apostle in Vayikra, a nefesh, a shetika, a chodav atame, must be talking about the problem is afterwards the person ate Kodshim, not that he ate Truma.
Now, what was so impressive about this limud of Rebbe's that Rabba is saying on a Dola Mayim, Ibodas Amukim, this amazing thing. So the Torah for Sarosh, I think it is, talks about, he says, because they knew the Gzeir Shava. They knew there existed the Gzeir Shava, Behemoth Smeya. They didn't know what you learned from it. So Rebbe pointed out what they learned from it. That's a special thing that they were able to learn. Some other Rishonim learned the other way around. They knew the din. He said before, we knew the din. They couldn't find a source for it until Rebbe was able to find the source.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
A chaya is not the same as a behemoth.
No, but the word chaya is a generic term. It can mean wild animals, but it can be a generic term meaning living creatures.
It's the most general term.
But it doesn't only mean wild. It has a general meaning and it has a specific meaning. Just like New York has a general meaning and a specific meaning. The word chaya has a general meaning as living creatures, and it has a more specific meaning, wild animals.
And in this sense, living creatures.
It means that, well, we would think it means that, yes, it means living creatures, and we have the word behemoth mea available, therefore, for this Zera Shava. Okay, fine. Ashkechon Trumas Kodesh. Okay, well, that. Again, you didn't know you were Tomei and you ate Kodshim, then you bring the Korban. Trumas Mikdash Menola, and how do we know the same thing applies going into the Bessim Mikdash when you're Tomei? The reason is, Omakrovachal Kodesh Le Sigav Ela Mikdash Le Tzavi, we have by a Yeledis. After a woman has given birth, the Torah says she should not touch any kodesh, and she should not go into the Beis Mikdash, meaning itkesh mikdash l'kodesh, meaning we're making a hekesh between the mikdash and the kodesh. Now, we learned back in Makkos, we discussed over there that the word tiga primarily means eating. We discussed over there, Rish Lakish had brought a limud over there that it also means touching, and then he learned something from it. But primarily, b'chol kodesh l'tiga means she's not allowed to eat it. So therefore, we see the pasuk is making a hekesh between eating kodesh and going into the Beis Mikdash.
I mean, kodesh and mikdash is not the same one.
But we make a hekesh between them because the pasuk puts them in the same pasuk, right after each other, the whole kodesh and vela mikdash. So whatever applies to the kodesh applies to the mikdash. If you chayav a korban olav yored for eating kodesh in helam tumah, then you also chayav a korban olav yored for going into the mikdash with helam tumah. The problem with that is, again, ihochi truma nami. Then you're back to the question, why don't we include truma also? Da'omamah, because in fact, we learned over there in Makkos that b'chol kodesh le'tziga l'rabbis is a truma. Because we said over there the word kodesh in that passage, b'chol kodesh le'tziga, means not only kodeshim, it also includes truma.
Therefore, we should say the same thing.
Say the same thing with truma. Yeah, we're back to the question before. The answer is, homiyat rahman abbas. Okay, but we have the miyot bas that we said before to exclude truma.
Right.
Okay, again, the question is, aim of buff l'mo'uti mikdash. Again, you can ask, like you did before, that maybe the word buff comes to exclude the base of mikdash, which some of the Rishonim say, but it's not the exact same question as before. Before we were saying that maybe you should not, maybe a korban olav yored shouldn't be enough, that you should have to, maybe you should have to bring a fixed kapha. Maybe buff is m'mayit mikdash, saying it's not enough to bring a korban olav yored, maybe you need here a fixed kapha. Here, the question would rather be differently. Who says maybe you don't bring a korban for the mikdash at all? The answer is, well, mistabra, heck, mikdash lo matzinon. Well, then it's logical to say we can't take out mikdash and say you shouldn't have to bring a korban at all. Shekhen v'kodes kamosa, because after all, similar to kodshim, in the sense that you get kodes for either one of them, betumah.
Right.
Okay, the problem is, adadabat truma lo matzinon. Fine, but on the contrary, you could argue you shouldn't be m'mayit truma. Shekhen achila kamosa.
But hold on,
because truma is similar to kodshim in the way that shekhen achila kamosa. They both eat it. Maybe you should say the Torah is m'chayiv yo korban olav yored. If you ate something that you were supposed to eat patara and you ate patrumma. Maybe for the mikdash, maybe you don't. Maybe you don't bring a korban at all.
Right.
You're saying they're both similar because kodshim and the mikdash because they're both kores, but truma and kodshim are both similar and that they're both eating. Why is one similarity stronger than the other? Ella, no. Never mind that explanation. We have to give a different explanation. Omar Rava, so no.
That's shlugda.
Rather, Rava says it as follows. There's three psukim where the Torah tells us that you have that there's three places where the Torah tells us that you get kodesh for eating shlomim when you're tamei.
What you have the process of nefesh, you see that before,
You have an, and then you have two other ones. You have you have another pasuk adjacent to that one that says v'anefesh asher tocha basam izevach hashlamim asher l'Hashem b'tumato olav v'nichrusa. That's two, and then you have another one in Parshas Emor that says that koyanim are not allowed to eat kodshim when they are not allowed to come close to kodshim when they're chama. And the Gemara explains elsewhere that coming close means eating. So you have three psukim that tell you that you get kores if you eat a shlamim. When you two, one of them says kodshim generically, the other two are specifically by shlamim. Lama, why shalosh krisis b'shlamim lama? Why do you have three times the Torah tells us that you get kores if you eat shlamim when you're chama?
How do you know it's
well, two of them are referring to shlamim. Two of them are talking in connection with the dinim of shlamim in Parshat Tzav. The third one is generic. The third one is in the third one.
Where do you see that in it?
Because you see, the pasuk says, "V'nefesh." Look at Gimel, for example. "V'nefesh kisiga v'chotamim v'chumas adam over behemet tmeir over choshak tzamim v'acham v'bisal zevach shlamim." That clearly says shlamim, and the previous pasuk also says Rashi brings it. "V'nefesh asher abater mizevach shlamim v'nichrasa." So there it also says shlamim. The third one in Emor, yeah, it doesn't say shlomim. It says kodshim generically. But why do we need three? Like this. Achas leklal, v'achas leprat. One teaches us, one is a klal, that it includes all kodshim. V'achas leprat. The second one teaches us that there is a prat, that there's a prat that applies to shlomim. So Rashi goes into a little bit of a discussion over here. What do we learn? In general, we say when you have a klal and then you have a prat, klal of prat, then you only like this. Rashi says if the klal and the prat were next to each other, if they were both there in Parshas Tzav or whatever, then we would say klal of prat ein b'chlal elamash of the prat. We exclude from the klal anything that's not the prat, meaning we would say this din applies only to shlomim. Only a person eats shlomim when they're tamei, when they get kares, no other carbon. Because the klal and the prat are far apart over here, what we actually do over here is we instead use a different one of the Yud Gimel Midas, which is Dover Shahoya B'chlal, when we have something that was included in a general rule, the Yosem and Achlal Alamed, and now it comes out, it's singled out from that general rule. Then we say, it comes to teach us that the rule applies to the entire Chlal, so not only Shlomim, but all Korbanos. So Rashi explains, what's the point is we do say that the miyot that we say is it only applies to kodshim mizbeach. It only applies to kodshim that are actually offered on the mizbeach. It would not apply to kodshim bedek abayis. If you have, for example, something where you took, let's say, for example, you took some food and donated it to the bedek abayis, where what they're going to do is they're going to sell it and use the money for the repairs of the Beis HaMikdash or whatever, and somebody were to eat that food when they're tamei, they would not get kodesh. But any kodshim mizbeach, they would. That's what the klal of prat. That's what the klal and prat is accomplishing. Because the klal of prat, and Rashi makes the point, it's not the klal and the prat are far apart. They're in different places in the Torah. Therefore, we don't doubt it as a klal of prat. Rather, we judge it as dover shahoy b'chlal v'yosem and klal alami. That's what Rashi explains. That is the difference. What we have in the Yud Gimel Midas, we have klal of prat, and then we have dover shahoy b'chlal v'yosem and klal alami. That's the difference. Rashi says when they're next to each other, when you have a klal immediately followed by the prat, it means only the prat. When you have the klal and elsewhere you have the prat, then it means that the prat teaches us on the whole klal. Rashi also goes on to point out, by the way, another important detail we need to understand about how the Yud Gimel Midas work is. Rashi says in that case, if you're saying that Dover Shahib Klal teaches us on the whole klal, then what's the difference between that and klal of prat to klal, where we say Iyap Don Elakena prat? That means that we take the prat and make it into a somewhat more general klal. The difference is, Rashi says, klal of prat to klal is you're including other things that are not listed. For example, you have klal of prat to klal. We talked about the other day, for example. If we say a klal of prat to klal, let's say when it comes to the marzeah, when it comes to what you use to pierce the Eved's ear after 6 years, they only say, because of the klal of prat to klal, it doesn't dafka have to be a marzeah, it doesn't dafka have to be an oil, it can be anything else that's made out of metal, even though those are not listed in the circuit. On the other hand, Dover Shahi B'chlal, Yotzim Nachbal Olamed, would be that we're not including anything else that it says in the Pasuk, that it says in the Pasukim, but what we're doing is we're learning from that, we're learning details that apply to that and apply to all the other ones. Rashi gives the example, let's say, for example, when we say Havara L'chalik Yotzim, when we're told elsewhere in the Gemara, we learned it back in Sanhedrin, I think, that the Torah mentions in general, you're not allowed to do Malacha on Shabbos. And then it mentions specifically, you're not allowed to make a fire on Shabbos. One meaning of that is l'chalik yotzas. It comes to teach us that it comes to teach us that you chayev individually a chatas for making a fire by mistake, by accident on Shabbos. And similarly, you also chayev individually a chatas for any other malacha you were to do on Shabbos. So we're not learning from Havara, we're not learning other malachas, but we're learning a detail that applies to Havara and that we're applying more generally to the klal.
That's
davar shahi b'chlal, v'yachman ha'klal l'lach. As opposed to klal prat klal would be, if we were to say, if we had a klal prat klal by Shabbos, for example, we would say, what kind of malachas are also on Shabbos? Only ones that are similar to Havara. But that's not what we're doing.
We never said anything like that before, so that's why that strikes us so strange.
Right. So that's what Rashi is pointing out, how these three rules of klal prat, and davar shahi b'chlal, v'yatzman ha'klal l'lamed, how these all fit right together, where we use each one. Okay. So why do we need the three criticisms again? So we have one for a klal that it applies to anything that has to do with the Bais Hamikdash. Another one for a prat to limit it, that it only applies to that it does apply to all kodshim, not just shlomim. However, only kodshim is there.
So the prat limits the klal.
The prat, that's what we're saying. If the klal and prat were next to each other, it would mean the klal is limited only to the prat. It would mean only shlomim. If you ate them, betuma, where do you get kari? Because they're not together, instead, what we make that we turn this klal of prat into davar shahoy b'chlal v'yatzman ha'klal l'lamed, and therefore it teaches us anything that is kodshim mizbeach, like shlomim, you would get kares for eating it if you're talking.
So the prat modifies
the prat modifies the klal. Yeah.
When the prat modifies the klal.
Yes. Yeah. Right. So that's two. The achas v'dvarim she'en necholim. The third one. I skipped a few lines. Achas v'klav, achas v'prat, v'achas v'tumach, suma v'tar v'stam. The third one is to tell us about. You have a case where the Torah just tells us that if you become tamei, then you have to bring a korban. Namely, our case of korban olav yored. V'eini yedea mahi, we don't know what it is. Heviyema, tumas kodesh. You must say, therefore, that it's talking about kodeshim, because the third one that we're talking about, getting kodesh for eating shlomim, shlomim is a type of kodeshim. However, we don't need it for kodshim because we already have our klal and we already have our prat. Because we already know tumas kodshim from Rebbe's zera shavah earlier on the Amud, behemoth meyer. Tneu inyan the tumas mikdash. Then therefore you can apply it to tumas mikdash and say that's how we learn that tumas mikdash you bring the korban over the earth.
It's the only thing we can apply it to.
It's the only thing we can apply it to. Yes, given that we have a miyot bach. So we said we have to be ma'at either truma or the Bais Hamikdash. But on the other hand, because we have the third place where it says kares by shlomim, and we know that can't apply to truma because you don't get kares for eating truma, but truma, that kares necessarily applies to the Bais Hamikdash. Then we can use it to say that that's what it means. When the Torah tells us elsewhere that if you tamei, then you have to bring a korban over the yerdit, that must be talking about tumas mikdash.
Cannot be truma.
Can't be truma.
So we knew before in the doc, top of the doc where good Baba,
yeah.
We knew that both eating the korban and going to the business was chorus. We knew the truma was misa.
Right.
But we still have to go through this.
Because over there we were arguing that maybe when it comes to the mikdash, a korban olav yored is not enough. Maybe you do have to bring a korban
right,
to mikdash, but it has to be a fixed chatas. Maybe for truma you bring an olav yored. Then we brought Rebbe's limud to say that it only applies to tumas kodesh. Therefore truma is out of the picture. However, now when we're talking about tumas mikdash, we still have to deal with how do we know that truma is not included again, and that we still use the limud buff, but now we also need the third kodesh that it says by shlomim, which we're going to reapply from shlomim. We're going to apply it to tumas mikdash, which involves kodesh, where truma never involves kodesh. Next question is
the Heine Boiler and Chagir Rabba Bo. The problem is you need these three criticisms, or you need the third one to get into something else. The Rabba Bo, the other Rabba Bo, Sholosh criticism.
Shlomim Lama. Again, why does it say three times Kores by Shlomim? Achas the Klal, the Achas the Prat. Again, one for the Klal, one for the Prat, like we said before. The Achas, but the third one, not to teach us about Tumas Mikdash, but rather, Ludvorim She'en and Necholim. It comes to teach us, even if you eat things that are not normally eaten, but you ate them a truma. For example, Rashi says, let's say you were to take some of the wood that's brought on the pile of wood on the Bais Hamikdash and on the Mizbeach, and you were to eat it, the truma. Ah, you have people with true paper. I guess you can have people read wood. So if you were to do that for truma, you would also be high of chorus. So how do we know? How do we know? So then it's not. and Olorub Shimon, D'Alma Dvarim She'en Nechol Ein Chayavon Alayim Karis. What about the Kornzit of Shimon, who says in Zvachim that no, things that you don't normally eat, like wood or levoino or whatever, you tackle wouldn't get karis for eating them b'toma. Ein Chayavon Alayim Karis Meshom Toma. He would say, L'Issuyah Haftaris Apnimius. He would say the third karis is to teach us you're also Chayav Karis if you eat b'toma meat from a chatos whose blood is brought into the hayhole. Namely, you have the chatoris, the par and the sori of Yom Kippur, you have the par helam dover shol tzibur, you have the par kohen gadol, or whatever, you have a number of korbanos. If you were to eat it, no, if you were to eat b'mezid, that you get karis. Yeah. Why? The sakhar adahamin, and now the reason why you need to be told that, because you would think, hoyov omer Reb Shimon, since we find that also Reb Shimon says, it also in Zvachim, anything which is not offered on the outer mizbeach, and in that sense, it's not like a shlomim. Ein chayavon alam shom pigul. He says that you can't be chayav on it for pigul. Wow. So pigul, we know, is where the kohen has a machshavas zman when he's shechting it. He has, or doing any of the avodas, he has in mind when he's shechting it. Let's say that I'm going to eat the meat of it later than the time I'm supposed to. That makes it pigul. Reb Shimon says pigul only applies to korbanos where the meat of them is eventually, with some part of them anyway, is burnt eventually on the outside of his bed. Or other kavanas like kav mincha or whatever, he would say the porim and nitzurafim, the irim and nitzurafim, are not burned on the mizbeach. After the blood is sprinkled inside the hayfal or whatever, the rest of the body of them is taken outside of Yerushalayim and burnt. Therefore, he says pigul doesn't apply to them because they're not similar to shlamim. The Torah tells us the concept of pigul in connection with shlamim. Mm-hmm. So Reb Shimon says, therefore, Reb Shimon says it only applies to kavanas that are like shlamim in that some part of them is offered on the mizbeach achitzen. These korbanos are not. So you would think, since he says that, mishum tuma nami loy, you would think maybe you are also not chayav for eating them b'tuma. Kamash malam, that is why we need the third kares, according to him, to tell us not. The point is, though, we need the third kares to tell us either that you're chayav for eating the wood or the levoino or whatever b'tuma, or that you're chayav for the chataris of pnimius b'tuma. How do we have the third one available for what Rabba is telling us that we're going to use it for tumas mikdash?
You got me some.
No. So we can't use that answer. Ella, no. So that's Shlagdam. Amri Nahajoy Mahadur. But no, rather the Nahajoy, the Chachamim of Nahajah said as follows. Never mind the Kharis. We have to ask in the same vein as we asked before about why it says three times Kharis by Shlomim in three different psukim. Now we have to ask, why does it say Tumah three times in three different psukim in connection with Shlomim? That each of those times, when it talks about eating it and being Chayav Kharis, each time it says that you're Tumah. What does it say three times Tumah? That achas the klal, achas the prat, achas the one is for the klal, one is for the prat. But achas the tumah k'suv of a Torah stam. The third one is for a place where the Torah tells us that if you're tomei, then you're going to be chayev, without specifying what you chayev, what you did when you were tomei. The any adamahi, you don't know what it is. Heavy emet tumas kodesh. You have to say since you have the third time tumah, then it means tumas kodesh, eating the kodshim when you're tomei. If you didn't have it, you didn't have, but you have. So therefore, you dash in it. That teaches us Tumas Kodesh, and again, being in the Tumas Kodesh, given that you don't need a third time to tell us that Tumas Kodesh that you chayav a korban for, that denakta lemid Rebbe, because we have Rebbe's limud from it before, we have Rebbe's limud from Behemoth Meher, therefore, Tneu in the Tumas Mikdash, therefore, we can use that for Tumas Mikdash. The problem with that is, v'hai nami mibarile, but you do need all three times when it says Tumas. I did the boil mikhtiv kares lechid rav avohu. Given that it had to say three times kares for rav avohu's various limudim, kasev nami tumas. Then it had to say tumas leitagi lebelav hachi. Because otherwise, how would you do? What are you going to say? You eat shlomim, you chayav kares. It had to say each time you eat shlomim when you're tumah, you chayav kares. So of necessity, if it mentions kares, automatically it has to mention tumah. You don't have an extra tumah over there. Every tumah goes together with its appropriate kares.
Right.
So we slog that up too. Ella Omar Rava, so no Rava tries a different answer. Asya tum ase tum ase. We have a Gzera Shava between two places where it says tum ase. Siv hocha lachol tum ase. Here you have by Korban Oliver Yered where it says that he touches a tumma of a person lachol tum ase, any tumma by which a person might become tummy. By the paradroma, it says that if a person becomes tummy mass and doesn't get sprinkled with paradroma water, he is tummy, his tumma is yet on him, therefore he's chayev. Malahalam, tumas mikdash. So there it is talking about tumas mikdash because it explicitly says that a person becomes tummy and does not get sprinkled with the paradroma water at Mishkan Hashem Timei. He made the Mishkan of Hashem tummy. How? By walking in. So we see that clearly talking about Tumas Mikdash. Afkan Tumas Mikdash. Well, then here also it has to be Tumas Mikdash. Okay. In that case, then, Then we have, okay, so far so good, except the L above Lomeli, fine. But in that case, if we're saying ultimately, so we went through a few possibilities, and we finally concluded that we have an actual Gzeira Shava that teaches us that Yechayev a Korban Olav Yodah for Tumas Mikdash. The problem with that is, we mentioned before that we had a move from the word to teach us that something we have to be memorized, either Truma or the Beis Mikdash, and we said ultimately we have to say it's Truma. But now, on the basis of what we're saying now, we have no reason to think that it should apply to Truma at all. Before we were arguing that maybe the word, if we're learning from B'chol Kodesh Le'Siga or whatever, then we're going to learn Truma as well. Now that we're saying that we're not even learning from that pasuk as far as the Korban Olav Yodah, then what do we need? The meal to B'chol for anyway. There's no reason to
learn Truma.
Because we don't have any reason to include Truma any more than anything, any more than any other Avera.
Right, because we're learning now from two different sources.
Yeah. So, the rabbi is nivlas oif tahar. The reason is, we're using the word buff to include, not to be mamayit, but to be marba, how we're going to do that, tomorrow's going to tell us in a second, but to be marba nivlas oif tahar. The case where a person becomes tameh from the nivela of a kosher bird. Meaning, there's a unique din that applies to the nivela of a kosher bird, which is, it's not matameh if you touch it. Unlike the nivela of an animal, for example. It's metame only if you eat it, if you swallow it. If you swallow at least a kezias of it, I think, then you become tame as you're swallowing it. So that kind of tumah we wouldn't know from the psukim by Korban Olav Yodah, because it only mentions over there that you touch tumas adam or dove tame or whatever. How would we know that it also implied? Yeah. So the question is, Hamid bought miyotahu. You said the word bah is a miyot. How are you being married or something? The answer is Mishum de Mi'utahu. The answer is Mishum de Mi'utahu Iyatar. Because this Mi'ut actually comes to include. Because, like this, the Pasuk had said, Ksiv ki oiki yiga. The Pasuk had started by saying that you touch something, which is Tomei, implying de bar negiya ein de la bar negiya loy. That it would only apply to the type of Truma which can be transmitted through touching. It wouldn't apply to the type of Truma which is transmitted only by swallowing. Uchtiv bach Mi'ut. Then it says bach, which is a Mi'ut. Have a miut acha miut, so now you have a miut after another miut, and we have the general rule, and miut acha miut, when you have one miut after another, just the opposite, we look at this makas as well, it comes to include something, so therefore, if I can't, it means not to exclude that type of tumah, but to include it, that if a person were to become tummy with that type of tumah, of nivlas oif tahar, and then eat truma or kodshim, not truma, or eat kodshim, or enter the Beis Mikdash, with a helem, then he would be chayav of the korban or the yodah.
Two negatives make a positive.
Partly because two negatives make a positive. The other idea, I think the Yad Ramah talks about is since you have a miut, and then you have a miut of the miut, that means you're excluding that thing from the general miut. You're including it back in. Yeah. Okay.
Can you do the whole thing again?
We had like this. So we had, so far, okay, so now this is the Maskana, therefore. So we have that. If you, again, our Mishnah had told us that if you had Yediyah B'Tchila, and you had Yediyah B'Sayf, and a Helam in between, and during that Helam you entered the Beis Mikdash, or you ate Kodshim, then you bring a Korban Olav Yodah. This sugya that we just had was to establish how do we know that that applies to those two cases. First of all, how do we know that it applies to Tumah, to Kodshim or the Beis Mikdash at all? Maybe it means in general a person becomes Tomei and forgot about it. And we slugged that up because we said logically that the onash v'his here is only for Tumas Mikdash v'Kodshim, and therefore the Korban also has to be. And then we went through the whole discussion, how we know that it applies to Kodshim and not Tumah, and how we know that it applies to the Beis Mikdash. So now we've reached that point, so that's it. That's how we know that. Again, how we know that you need Yediyah B'Tchila B'Yediyah B'Sayf, the Helam in time, that we dealt with earlier on the basis of the two times it says V'Ne'alam, or just the fact that V'Ne'alam itself implies the Yediyah. Yeah. Then we said in the Mishnah, Yesh B'Yediyah B'Tchila V'Ein B'Yediyah B'Sayf, that if you had Yediyah at the beginning and there was no Yediyah at the end and there was a Helam in between, then we said, Sarah, Nasa B'Sneim B'Chola, then we said the Sarah, whose blood is brought into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur, as well as Yom Kippur itself, it's toilet, it suspends the punishment until the person realizes what he did and then brings the curse. So that now we have to figure out how we know that. How we know that
Sar Hanafim. Wait until Yom Kippur?
Yeah. So how do we know that the Sar Hanafim, if you remember earlier, so much the better than he brings the curse.
Right.
Yeah. How do we know that the Sar Hanafim helps for that particular Aveir? So like this, turn it up on him. We learn it up right. When the Pasuk says, V'chiper ala kodesh mitumeis b'nei Yisrael v'gomer, the Pasuk says that with the Sar, the Kohen is v'chaper for the tumas of Bnei Yisrael. Now, what does tumas mean in this connection? Yeshli b'inyan zelah habi shalosh tumas. On the face of it, we could include any of three different types of tumah. Tumas of a disorder, tumas gilui arayis, tumas shfichas damim. Never mind tumah as an actual tumah. We could include any of these three because each of them is described someplace in the pasuk as tumah. When it comes to Avodah Zarah, the pasuk uses the expression and the person does it and thereby is metame, my holiness. Incidentally, by the way, that pasuk is actually talking about worship, is actually talking about bringing a person bringing a son to Moloch. We discussed in Sanhedrin whether Moloch is Avodah Zarah or not. We have different opinions on it. If we say Moloch is Avodah Zarah, then there you go. Even if we say it's not, you can kind of make a kavah chomer. Madach, that kind of chukas agoyim, which is not full-fledged Avodah Zarah, is considered being metame, the holiness of the Jewish people. How much more so real Avodah Zarah? Yeah. By Arayas, it says you have to guard my guarding, that you shouldn't do any of the disgusting chukas of the goyim, veloisi tamu b'hem, and you shouldn't become tome through them. So we see that Arayas is also described as tumah. And b'shpichus damim oim v'leitzi tamei at the aretz. B'shpichus damim, the pasuk says, you shouldn't be metamei the land. So we see that tumah, the word tumah actually applies to all three of them. Yachol al-gimel tumah salolo yehei tzarei mechaper. Maybe it means that the sir hanas of the name is mechaper for these three types of averus. Before we get to the answer, by the way, I'll tell you, this Ksan Sofer says an interesting thing. The fact is, it's not just that the pasuk is using tumah by each of these things as sort of a figurative expression. There is actually actual tumah that can be involved in each one of them. When it comes to Avodah Zarah, there's a tumah involved in Avodah Zarah, Midrabban. There's a machlokes in a few places in Shas, whether it's like the tumah of a nida, whether it's like the tumah of a sheret, but whatever, there is a tumah involved. When it comes to Gilead, you even touch something over Avodah Zarah, you become something. You touch something over Avodah Zarah, yeah. Gilead Arayat is, in general, a person has relations, they become tumah afterwards, tumah keri. And shvichas damim, generally speaking, you touch the other person in the course of killing them, or you have a sword or whatever that transmits trauma or whatever. So practically speaking, a person really does become tummy from each of
these. Before the rifle was invented.
Yeah, okay.
So you touch a tselem, you become tummy?
A tselem is questionable whether it's actual or a desire. And I can tell you, I don't remember what it says in the big Shulchan Aruch, and the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, it says one that they worship is considered Avodah Zarah, the kind that they hang around their necks for decoration is not.
Yeah, yeah, but it's not really in the big Shulchan Aruch.
It is. It might be censored out a little bit, but whatever. It's, yeah. Anyway.
It's not so clear, though, okay. Like it is in the Kitzur.
Okay, anyway. So how do we know that the Sur HaNasa B'Fanim is not Mechaper for those? Like this. Talmud Lai, remember, Mi Tumas B'nei Yisrael. Therefore, the Pasuk says, of the Tumas of B'nei Yisrael, which is a mute. B'loi Kol Tumas, so therefore not all the Tumas. So which one does it include? Now we have to use a Limud for that purpose. We're going to use a Binyanav. What situation do we find, what kind of tumah do we find that elsewhere the Torah distinguishes and sets aside from all other kinds of tumas? Heviyam is a tumas mikdash v'kadjah, namely tumas mikdash v'kadjah, where, now we're going to, on the face of it, we'd say the fact that there's an olah v'yored, but the Gemara is going to have to discuss later on, Chesamon Aleph, where exactly we see that tumas mikdash v'kadjah is singled out among all other kinds of tumas. For the moment, let's take it as
we...
We just said the korban olah v'yored. We said that we had besides for tumas mikdash v'kadjah, we said you bring a korban olah v'yored for shvuas bitui and for shvuas and for shvuas edus. But neither of those is ever described as tumah. So those are out of the picture.
Right.
But we see somehow, and again, the Gemara is going to discuss later where exactly we see, but we do see some place that the Torah singles out tumas mikdash v'kadjah and applies a certain rule to it that does not apply to any other kind of tumah. That doesn't apply to Avodah Zarah, doesn't apply to Gilui Arayis, doesn't apply to Shvichas Damim. Well, therefore,
therefore, with you also, the Torah is singling out me tumas b'nei Yisrael, that some
of the tumas of b'nei Yisrael are taken care of by the Torah. It must mean this one. Give it Rabbi Yehuda. Yeah, Mikdash Tumas Mikdash Kachem. Give it Rabbi Yehuda. That's how Rabbi Yehuda said it. Rabbi Shimon says you don't even need to look elsewhere where the Torah singles out a certain kind of Tumah. You can see in these very psukim themselves. The Pasuk says you should make a kapara on the Kodesh, mitumos, from the Tumas. HaKodesh mitumos, implies mitumos shal Kodesh, implying Tumas that has to do with Kodesh.
From the juxtaposition
of Kodesh and Tumas.
Kodesh and Mitumas, right.
So Yachol al kol tumah shebekodesh yehi sarah zemachaper. Fine. Let's continue though. How do we, you would think therefore that it means that the sarah is machaper for any kind of tumah that would involve the kodesh, and not just like our Mishnah said, the case where you knew at the beginning and then forgot in the middle and then didn't know afterwards. How do we know it only applies to that one specific case? Or actually, not only that specific case. He said in the Mishnah, it also applies to the person who's bemazed throughout. Therefore, that same passage continues that the Kohen Gadol is mechaper for pishehem, for their pshoyim, meaning their rebellious averas, lechochatoisam, for all their sins. Pesha is something deliberate, not only deliberate, but like he's deliberately rebelling against Hashem. Chatos is the person does it by mistake. Chet means the person does it by mistake. Chatoyim dumya de pshoyim. It means, therefore, we're making a comparison between the chet and the pesha. Ma pshoyim she'en b'nei korban. Just like the pesha has to be a situation where you're not able to bring a korban for it. And you don't for Thomas Mr. Shikotcher, because we said before, you only do it if there was hell in the meantime. Af chatoyim she'en b'nei korban. So the same thing. The chatoyim also has to be a case where you're not bringing a korban. Okay, fine, but how do we know it applies to the specific case where you knew at the beginning and didn't know at the end? We said in the Mishnah, we have the other situations you had where you never knew, we have the situation where you also don't bring the korban, we have the case where you didn't know at the beginning that you were tomei, or you didn't know to begin with the din that becoming tomei makes you also teach these things or whatever. We said later in the Mishnah that other seirim take care of those. How do we know this seir is not meant to take care of those? But the pasuk also uses the word l'chol chatoisam, implying chayove chatois, somebody who eventually could be in the situation where they have to bring a chatos. Given that we said before that you have to have yediyah b'tchila, therefore, automatically, in order to ever bring the chatos, the korban of the year, that is, therefore, the only one that the sir hanafsa b'fnim can be dealing with is where there was yediyah b'tchila. If there was no yediyah b'tchila, you're never going to be in a situation of bringing a chatos. That's not included in l'chol chatoisam. So that's where we see it. That's the bottom line. We're going to have to discuss this right now, but that's how we get from the psukim that on the one hand doesn't apply to avodah zarah gilui aris shfichas damim. It only applies to tumas mitzvah shekatcha. But within that, it doesn't apply to any case of tumah. It only applies to the case where you're not actually bringing a korban, but you could have been in the situation where you would bring a korban, namely if you eventually find out what you did. So that's how we narrow it down. So let's start analyzing the braisa a little bit. Omamar, yeshli b'inyan zeh lahavi gimel tumas. We said that you would think if it says mitumas b'nei Yisrael, it can include any of the three tumas: tumas avodah zarah, tumas gilui aris, tumas shfichas damim. We have to figure out with each one of these. Hai avodah zarah, hechi damim. What are you thinking would be the sin? What's the hava? To think that the sir of Yom Kippur should be mechaper for avodah zarah. Even mazed, if we're talking about a person worshipped avodah zarah mazed, back tolerable, then he has to get executed. A korban is not a kapara for him. If he did it b'shoigig by korban, then he himself has to bring a korban. There's no korban sibra that's machapa for him. He himself has to bring his own korban.
Right.
The answer is. B'mezid, v'lai asru bay, or b'shoigig v'lai siyadala. Yes, but you could have two other scenarios. One where it was b'mezid, but they didn't give him asra, and you can't execute him. Or it was b'shoigig, and he never found it out. You would think, therefore, that's the hava amina, that you would think that maybe the sir hanasa b'snim helps for that, to be mechaper for him, since we can't give him misa, or since he doesn't know that he has to bring his korban.
Either
v'lai asra, v'lai yediya. Therefore, the braisa is telling us that, no, that's not what b'tumis means. It means, doesn't mean avodah zarah. So the Surah Anasa B'Fnim is not Mechaper for Avodah Zarah. What about Gilui Aris?
You could have thought
that it applies to those two cases of Avodah Zarah. Right. We're being told that no. Okay, Gilui Aris, Nami Hechizami. Let's consider the case of Gilui Aris. What's the scenario? Again, even Mezid Bakhtolahu. If it's Bemezid, then he's Chayev. Then he's Chayev Misa. And Tosfos says, even if it's the ones that are not Chayev Misa, he'd be Chayev Malkus then. Weiter, he gets his Kapara with Malkus then. Anyone that's not Chayev Misa is going to be Chayev Koros. E b'shoigig by korban. And if he did Arayas b'shoigig, he's going to have to bring a korban chatos. So again, what would be the hava minute to think that the Surah Nasa B'Fnim should help for those? Again, same answer, b'mezid. But why ask you b'shoigig v'lai siyadalai? Same answer, he did it b'mezid, but there was no asura. So therefore, you would think the Surah Nasa B'Fnim saves him from Koros. Or he did it b'shoigig and he never even found out that he did anything wrong. You would think that it's toila for him. No, it doesn't.
Shaygin, and he never found out.
He never found out, what he did was awesome. He didn't know when he did it. He never found out. He never found out that the one that he had relations with was a close relative.
He
thought it was Moshe, or whatever, yeah.
And his sister was so embarrassed, she never told
him. Yeah, whatever.
And his wife never found out.
Yeah,
okay.
Same thing. That was not, no, we would think the Braisa started out with the Tava Amina that you would think. Mitumis B'nai Yisrael means those kinds of Tumas, and it's telling us that, no, that's not what Mitumis means.
Mitumis
means only Tumas Mitzvah Kachar. Okay, and Shvichas Domim Nami, Hechi Domim, what's the scenario with Shvichas Domim? Iba Mezid Bakhtolahu, again, if he's Bemezid, he has to get executed. Iba Shogig Bakgolus, and if he's Beshogig, he has to go into Golus, and that's his Kapara. And again, the answer is Bemezid. Well, I ask you, Beba Shogig, Vlai Siadele, Inami, or in the case of Ritzeach, we can give another answer. You have all the cases that we learned about in Makkos, where a person is not Chayiv Golus for one reason or another, either because he was Karev L'mezid or because it was Oynes, as the case may be.
Karev L'mezid,
we said he's not Chayiv Golus, but he still has to walk his back because the Goel Adam can come after him. And Oynes, we said, if he was Oynes, we had the example over there, let's say, for example, where he was throwing stones into a place where nobody ever goes, and then somebody punked went there.
Right.
So then he's an Oynes. He's Vaita Potter from Golus, and the Goel Adam can't go after him. You would think those are the cases where the Surah, not the Mishnah, helps for him.
Not.
No, it's not.
It's a Midrash.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll continue tomorrow, Bez Hashem, with more discussion of the Braisa. We're going to figure out where exactly do we see when we say that the Torah singles out Tumas Mitzvah Shekachov. We're going to have a bit of discussion. Where do we see that the Torah singles it out? In what, regardless of what?